Welcome back to Purely IFS, a show that aims to support therapists and practitioners in using internal family systems as their primary approach with clients. I'm Gail Williamson.
And I'm Emma Redfern. In today's episode, it's part two of our focus on how parts affect our health, how our bodies affect our parts, and how body sensations can be viewed as trailheads.
There's just so much we could talk about in relation to this, isn't there, Emma? We could easily do a part three.
Yes, it's such a fascinating and productive area of focus.
It really is, and I think we're just both hoping that these two episodes will encourage more IFS therapists to go in through the body.
Am I right in thinking, Gail, that you don't see a separation between the parts and the body?
Yeah, that's right. For me, our parts comprise both mind and body, so that healing our parts inevitably has a positive impact on our body. But I'm not saying that also making use of various body therapies outside of sessions can't be valuable and supportive, particularly during times of crisis in the body. Of course, we'd still be aiming to do this in conjunction with our parts, which I think you can say more about, Emma.
Well, it's been very significant for me to have body work alongside therapy. For people like me who might have a challenging relationship to the body, it's a blessing to have a self-led body worker caring for my body. So big shout out to any of the team, I like to think of my supporters as, who might be listening. So in my time, I've been actively IFSing on the inside while face down or face up on various massage couches. And I'm thinking of a facial I received on a spa trip with my sister one time. It was different from usual. The practitioner was a mature lady, and I was struck by her presence from the start. It was a special experience having her tend to my face, and a burden came to the surface around how it's just not okay to be me. But alongside that, juxtaposed with that, was the sense of, wow, it is okay to be me. And that freed up some space inside for sure. And more recently, I was face down this time, receiving a back treatment. And in my mind's eye, I saw a six-year-old. And she was still stuck back in that traumatizing November event I mentioned previously.
Yeah.
In the moment, I realized that although she'd been unburdened many times, the retrieval hadn't stuck. So she was still back where the trauma happened. Anyway, she'd made herself known, and I invited her to come out of there, and she's now in the present at last.
I'm diverging slightly from our topic, but I really appreciate your willingness to be open about the health issues you have, Emma, and what you are doing to care for yourself. And it makes me think of an article that I read recently on the idea of unwellness. The idea that we all struggle to be well, that the default is not good health.
Oh, interesting.
Academic Mimi Koo, I think that's how you pronounce it, has written a book, Dear Elia, Letters from the Asian American Abyss, in which she encourages more reflection on the forces contributing to our health or unwellness. She says society teaches us we should take care of ourselves, but only so that we can be as productive and high-achieving as possible. Koo says this is a wellness that puts pressure on you to pretend you are okay and frames not being okay as some kind of personal failure, whereas actually she would say we are all unwell. What most people don't realize is that this construction of wellness actually produces unwellness, she says. We're being forced to be well, to pretend we're okay, to never have needs, to never be sick, because all those things would mean something is wrong with us and we don't actually belong. So for Koo, the goal is care, not wellness.
I really like that, Gail. Care being the focus rather than wellness. And I know some of my parts are burdened with keeping on, keeping on. And as a child, my parts worked really, really hard to hide how ill I was at times.
Yeah, so to return to that point about parts being both mind and body, I think it might be worthwhile saying a bit more about this. There's such a thing now as somatic IFS, which for me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because when we are working with parts, we are inevitably working with the body. We don't actually need to be using a lot of extra somatic practices with clients to tap into the body. Our parts are inherently somatic. The very first thing that we do in insight work, after all, is ask a client to find the part in their body. And yet, somatic IFS implies that we need something additional to tap into the body.
Sure, people don't realize that when we're using the first three F's during insight, these are intended to help a part and body, hence find in the body, focus on it and flesh it out, which deepens us into our physical experience rather than staying in our thoughts or cognition. And this is why, ideally, any IFS training includes an experiential element for us to tap into our own awareness of how our parts manifest in the body. And even if they live in the head is still, of course, part of the body.
Sure. For me, the existing IFS model is sufficiently complex and comprehensive as it is. It gives us almost everything we need in order to heal or transform the parts. And I think I just wanted to make that point for anyone learning this model, where if they go down the somatic IFS route, they may make life much harder or more confusing for themselves. One thing we haven't touched on yet is anger.
Ah, yes. Such a marmite emotion and energy, love it or hate it, our parts are going to have strong opinions and feelings about it.
Yes, they sure are.
And I'm also aware that there's quite a strong link made by people like Gabor Mate between repression of anger and serious health concerns, such as cancer.
That's right. And yet, if you have any experience helping clients with their parts, you will know that getting access to an angry part is the one that often takes a lot of time.
Yes, so many parts can be terrified of the anger, fearing that expressing it or letting it show might still be a question of life or death. As young children doing what it takes to survive, it makes so much sense for our parts to favour attachment over authenticity. And particularly in white Western culture, where children are seen and not heard, being acceptable means parts work so hard to swallow down or block anger to avoid abandonment, rejection, or violence.
That's perhaps interesting to note that while probably the majority go down the route of compliance and suppression, there are also those of us who will fight. I certainly had a strong, angry fight-back response to the circumstances of my teenage years. But then what often happens is that if a child or teenager's angry part does manage to be dominant, eventually this will result in external shaming, which then leads to the same result, suppression.
Yeah, and one of the major tasks in therapy as an adult can be to help parts know that anger is valid, important, and can be felt and expressed safely. And it won't make us the same as those who hurt or controlled us when we couldn't protect ourselves. I was fortunate to work with a body psychotherapist who specialised in anger work, and it was glorious to feel anger in my body as I punched the punch bag or thwacked it with a great big stick. And this was before I discovered IFS, but in IFS understanding, I'd say I'd certainly let go of some legacy and personal burdens during my time with him. And you met a very interesting part related to anger this week, Gail.
I did. This client is one of those many people who wasn't able to get angry as a child. It wasn't safe. On a rare occasion when he did, he was locked in a cupboard.
Ah, so his anger really was exiled. First by the parent and physically locking him away, and then internally by his protectors.
Sadly, yes. Again, I won't go into too much detail, but just to say that Jack has various stresses in his present life, roles that he has to fulfill where anger still doesn't seem acceptable. So when he said he'd had severe tiredness along with a nosebleed the day before our session, something he has had off and on throughout the years, I suggested we investigate. He quickly found the part that caused the nosebleed at the top of his nose, and when he asked, "Why do you cause them?" it said something about release, and the other word it used was cleansing.
And I guess this is where the client or the therapist figuring out part doesn't need to do any work. You just get the client to ask the part for more information.
Yes, I just said, "Can I say more?" And Jack got that it was trying to release something that's blocked. And I said, "Can I tell you more about what's blocked?" And he heard then the words pressure, heat, red, fire. So this made me think it probably was related to anger.
Sure, but you wanted to hear it first from the part.
Yes, so I just prompted, "Can the part be any clearer?" And then it was just one word, anger. And I just kept prompting for more information. Jack said, "The part feels there's no outlet for anger, so it's cleansing and renewing the blood, releasing toxins, and it says that this is usually accompanied by exhaustion."
So you heard then that this part is aware of another part that's trying to deal with the anger by causing lots of tiredness?
Yeah, the nosebleed part was able to tell us that it worked with this part. But next, I followed my curiosity about the nosebleed part's earlier comments regarding cleansing the blood and asked, "Where did it get the idea to cause nosebleeds?" Jack said, "It's from movies. It's showing me where there would be fights and blood spilled," which is when it then all clicked into place for me. And I said to Jack, "I'm wondering if actually this part is trying to warn you with the nosebleeds not to get angry." There was an immediate response. Jack said, "Yeah, the part says anger leads to violence and blood." We were able to really validate this part, but also let it know that Jack had already retrieved one little boy from a dark cupboard, which he was glad to hear. But obviously our work here is ongoing.
That's great to hear, Gail. And I'm reminded that although I use the word healing a lot when I talk about IFS, I also think of the word liberation. Of the four main goals of IFS, the first one is liberating parts from extreme roles and burdens. And that little boy is being liberated.
Liberation, such a great word, and just so apt here.
Another aspect of this fascinating subject we can't really do justice to in two podcasts is not making assumptions about what parts do and don't know. Like we've said in IFS, we think of parts as real personalities, not abstract metaphors. And we might see an image of a child inside or a younger version of ourselves. But parts themselves don't always relate to themselves as having bodies at all.
Can you give us an example, Emma?
Sure. Well, a suicidal part who wants the client gone from this world may not realise that killing the body means they too will end, at least in some way. They may not be fully aware that they share the same body with the client and the rest of the system. Although we know soul can't be destroyed, the body can.
Yes, I encounter that regularly. Parts not being fully aware that they are in a body, that they also share with other parts and self.
And another example is when a part is so intently focused, either on the job if they're a protector, or on the terror facing or surrounding them if they're an exile. They may not realise they're holding their breath, or they may feel disembodied in some way. And it can be helpful sometimes when we send self-infused breath to a part, or ask them to feel the warmth in the body they share, if it's there. Actually, here, Gail, I'd like to honour the hard work of dissociative or dissociating parts who learn very young to absent us or psychologically take us away from really scary situations in the outside world that might otherwise overwhelm the system, or they step in to block other parts in the inner system, and they can hijack the nervous system in an instant, life or death reaction, a bit like when animals play dead to survive attack from a predator, or when somebody switches a light off so it all goes dark.
They're very hard working, highly reactive firefighter parts, aren't they? I've often heard parts connected to abuse say that other parts, probably these firefighters, had pushed them out of the body.
Yes, where parts might leave the body and float above it. I've actually seen photos where I can see in my face that I may be physically present, but emotionally I'm pretty much not there. Someone inside has pressed the off switch. It's a big subject that we might say more on in another episode, but just sending appreciation to these dedicated parts.
That ability to dissociate really highlights the power and ingenuity of our parts. And actually, there was another client this week who had a part using her body very effectively. This client is in her 30s, and she's someone who had a really strong religious upbringing.
Yes, and this case is also an interesting example of a spiritual bypass, isn't it? That's where we might try and bypass our parts by handing over responsibility to a religious figure, or meditating away our difficult thoughts or feelings.
Yeah, so she mentioned struggling a lot with low energy over the past week. And when Julia went inside, she found a part that at first said it was trying to slow her down. But it became clear that it was actually trying to slow down other hard-working parts of Julia, including her pleaser part. It was also aware of and trying to deal with exile feelings. Interestingly, it showed her the old junk room that her family used to have in her old childhood home as a vivid way of illustrating how there were all these feelings that were just being ignored and building up, and it said that soon they'd overwhelm her.
Oh, that makes sense for someone raised in an environment where emotions were just messy or difficult or even sinful. In that case, there's an imperative they be hidden.
Yeah.
And yet they just don't vanish, or they don't go away, as we know.
No.
And if an emotion isn't met in the moment by kindness or validation, our parts take on these unmet emotions as burdens that can stay with them for a lifetime and beyond, across generations, unless actively worked through in IFS, say.
Yeah. So the part causing low energy thought Julia was about 10, and it led to a girl in her bedroom, lonely and crying. And this was the key thing that the low energy part was trying to do, send her to bed. It's what I would do in the past. I would go to bed if I needed to cry. It was my retreat, Julia explained to me. The 10-year-old told her that she was very sad, but that she couldn't be. I have to be happy even when I'm not. I got Julia to ask, where did she get this belief from, that she couldn't be sad? She says everywhere, basically her parents and the church. She was told that if you have Jesus in your heart, you're always happy. And she felt that if she wasn't happy, the family home would fall down.
Wow, it was such a strong message she'd picked up about what was acceptable in a home and what really wasn't. And I'm thinking it's a great example of how individuals and families can hand over their autonomy to spiritual figures, whether that's Jesus, Mary, or Jehovah. So if something good happens, it's because of Jesus. And if something bad happens, it's because you haven't prayed hard enough.
And then also, if someone died, even the grief would be bypassed, with the focus placed on the afterlife, how you'll see that person again in this glorious afterlife, so you don't need to feel sad. Again, our work with these parts is ongoing. At the end of this session, I just got her to ask the part causing low energy if it would be prepared to ease off somewhat over the next week and let self check in on the little girl. I said we'd keep talking to it and including it in our plans to help the girl further. I'm thinking we've covered a lot in these two podcasts, Emma. Is there anything you'd like to end with?
Yes, I'd like to end on a bit of fun and playfulness. And following on from the example about anger, consciously letting parts take over the body can be both useful and enjoyable. I can tend to get a bit serious, as you know, Gail. But I often like letting parts blend and getting all dramatic about themselves. And I'm thinking of one day a while ago when a part of me was very angry with my husband and I wanted to let him know. Other parts weren't so sure, but didn't stand in this part's way of getting angry in a playful way. It imagined it was a more fiery nationality and sort of performed the anger, gesticulating and speaking loudly. It was great fun, and neither of us felt bad, and my system didn't censor the part with the anger.
I'll try and remember that the next time I'm angry with my husband, Emma. Before we finish, Emma, maybe just to give listeners a bit of extra incentive to be curious about any ailment that your client talks about. In the past few years, I've spoken to parts that caused breast cancer, a part causing an abscess at the site of an old injury in a bid to get help for the part still holding the trauma of a violent assault. I've spoken to parts that raised iron to dangerous levels, parts that caused diabetes, parts causing chronic pain, and also parts that were causing fibroids, and then as a result of working with them, the fibroids shrank.
And I believe in studies of people with very distinct parts that are very separated from each other. They can even manifest in the body differently, where one part might need glasses and yet another doesn't.
Amazing.
And thanks again for joining us on Purely IFS. We'll be back again soon. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.